about? It's our weekly catch-up with the National Party's Amy Adams.
Hi, Amy. How are we going?
Hi, Laura. Good. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. It's a nice, beautiful, sunny day here in Auckland. So, yeah, might go for a swim today.
Oh. Well, I'm pleased for you. We've had about, I don't know, it seems like 2 or 3 weeks of grey, sort of drizzly. Not really wet, just kind of a bit meh.
Oh no, I'm sorry to hear that. That's no good for a Christmas cool down, yeah. I guess.
Yeah, it might come up for Christmas, so there's still time.
Yeah, still time for things to turn around, hopefully.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll start with letting fees.
Yeah.
So these have been banned, and they've garnered a lot of criticism for quite a little long time. So I'm curious, how do you think this will affect New Zealand's realty industry?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, what we're seeing is looking pretty clearly as if it's simply going to push rents up. I mean, landlords obviously, you know, have costs in having properties managed. Right? For those of them who have them managed, some of them do them themselves, of course, and there shouldn't be much impact in there. But for those who use tenancy management companies, there's a cost involved with that, and if it can't be picked up through letting fees, you can only imagine that people aren't going to suddenly not charge for their services. So I suspect we're going to see rents push up, and that's certainly the advice that the Minister had when he made this legislation, and that's certainly what we're hearing from the rental property management industry already. So while it was all said to be about helping tenants, it looks very much as if it's not going to help do that at all, and it's just going to push up rents further. And of course, we've seen rents go up a lot this year, so that's not good news for tenants.
Yeah, I kind of do question the ethics around it personally. So for me, it looks like property managers are charging this to a new tenant, but that's more work being done on behalf of the landlord. So shouldn't the landlord be having to foot the bill for the property manager's work?
Yeah, but when you think about it, any business, any costs involved in running your business ultimately get included in the cost that the consumer pays, right? So whether you're making tins of beans, any cost that the business has to pay in making those tins of beans ultimately all gets picked up in the price that they sell for. And it's a bit the same. So, yeah, you're right, it is work done for the landlord, but the landlords are always going to think about the price that they charge as being enough to pick up all of the costs incurred. So it's it is, you know, I'm not saying it's a good thing, but I'm just saying it's like any other business where all of the costs that get incurred in doing it have to be collected through the price that's eventually charged.
Yeah, and then also the conversation does start to go around if rent is going to rise in relation to banning letting fees. That doesn't really equal out. Say rent rises $5 for a person across the entire year, that's not going to level out for letting fees. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, to be honest, I'm not. I don't, you know, have properties that I rent out, so I don't know what the average letting fee is. But you're right. You would like to think that if the rent is being adjusted to cover that, then it shouldn't be any more over the course of a tenancy than the letting fee was, because obviously it's not just a year. You know, if you're in the property for a long time, you know that goes right through. So you'd like to think that the rent isn't adjusted any more than that. But I think more likely what's going to happen is the landlord is going to look at a whole raft of new costs they're facing, because the letting fees, frankly, is just one sort of reasonably small part of it in the big scheme of things. They're facing more tax that they're paying. They're facing higher insulation and management costs. They're facing a number of these things. And so I think they're going to be looking at all of the costs of now being a landlord, and they're going to be working out what the property needs to rent for to make that pay. And of course, if they can't make it pay, chances are they'll sell the property, and then there are fewer rental properties to be had, and that unfortunately pushes up price as well. Mm-hmm. So this is what we've been saying to the government, is that, you know, all these things might sound lovely at first glance, but if the net effect of it all is to push rents up, then, you know, you're hurting the very people you want to try and help.
Absolutely. Also, you're just going to shift on to minister meetings being made public. Now, I'm curious if you think this is potentially indicative of a reaction to the potential mistrust of people in Parliament.
Yeah, I don't think so particularly. I mean, we'll wait and see. I haven't seen any of them be made public yet, so it'll remain to see what sort of information they put out, because ministers and you know, both governments, I'm not saying it was any different, can withhold all sorts of information if they don't think it's a good idea to release it. So just saying they're putting out their diaries, it could end up being very generic nothing, or it could actually be quite fulsome, and we'll have to wait and see how open they are. I think the reality is that ministers know that their diaries, the briefings they get, all those sorts of things, are able to be accessed through written questions and through the Official Information Act. And this was the discussion I think we had a couple of weeks ago, Laura, about the number of questions we're asking, because what we were finding was that we were having to ask, you know, repeated questions to get this information, and it's information that has to be disclosed. And so rather than going through this process of us having to ask a separate question every day of, you know, the meetings or the briefings that they've had, you know, given that the material has to ultimately be released, it's more efficient for everyone to just put it out. So I think it's probably an efficiency move more than anything else. But as I said, we're going to wait and see how fulsome they are and what they put out. They might be quite selective. I imagine we'll see something that's reasonably bland and a bunch of stuff withheld. But we'll see what happens.
That'll be interesting. Yeah, Shane Jones from New Zealand First, he said there isn't anything sinister about who politicians are meeting with. Do you think that's a fair comment?
Well, I mean, I can only speak for my diary and the way I ran it, both as a minister and now, and I think that's right. I mean, the reality is when you're a minister, you meet with all sorts of people. In fact, I kind of think you have to do your job well, and that should be meeting with people from all over whatever industry you're meeting with. So, for example, and I've never been the health minister, but if you're the health minister, I expect you would meet with, you know, tobacco companies and the like, because regulation of tobacco and smoking is part of your job. So I think, you know, but equally you'd be meeting with the health promotion groups and the anti-smoking groups. So I think, you know, that the public, you know, should be mindful of the fact that actually doing the job well means meeting with all sorts of voices around an issue, not just the people that, you know, whatever section of society thinks you should be meeting with. And as long as those things are done in a transparent, upfront way and you know, properly, when I say properly recorded, you know, meetings are kept and the like, I don't think there's anything particularly suspicious about that.
Yeah, I do kind of think back to what happened with Simon Bridges meeting with the businessman Yukun Zhang. And there was...
Which one? Sorry, I didn't miss that. Who? What was the name you said?
Yukun Zhang. He's the businessman who donated to the National Party earlier this year.
I don't follow our donations particularly. You're talking about the stuff that was caught up in the Jamie Lee Ross thing.
Yes, all that stuff caught up in it. And I think there was definitely notes of distrust from the public around that interaction. So I'm curious if you think those notes of distrust are something that maybe are perpetuating this forward.
Well, I think there's a heck of a lot of xenophobic nonsense in that. People get much more caught up about meeting a Chinese New Zealand resident than they do meeting another New Zealand businessman. And actually, the reality is people from all walks of life donate to political parties. We don't get any public funding. And if you take any political party in New Zealand, they have donors who give them money, and they often have events for donors. That's how they raise the funds to carry on campaigns. But it's sort of convenient for people from time to time to try and imply there's something shady about having fundraising events or having people who want to donate to your party, and whether that person is a Chinese New Zealand resident, a New Zealand New Zealand resident, a Samoan-born New Zealand resident, I think is sort of by the by. I think it's something people like to beat up.
Yeah, I do kind of question around that if that kind of situation was something to do with the public not being quite sure about certain things within politics and how they work. Do you think there's something to be said about that level of engagement that does create a mistrust?
I think you're probably right. I think there's probably not a very good understanding about what the reality is of politics. And so when you don't know something, it can look a bit strange. For example, I don't think most people realise that political parties and political candidates don't get any taxpayer funding. So, you know, we all have to go out and raise the money for our campaigns and for our and as parties for the election. And obviously there's very strict rules around who you can get donations from and what must be disclosed. Parties are very careful to comply with those. And in fact, you know, we review those as a parliament quite regularly. And I think that balance is right, because you've got to have the balance between individuals being free to support political parties and candidates of their choice, freely and in private if they wish to, but then when they're making large donations, then obviously there's a public interest in knowing who that is. But I think you're right. I don't think the general public necessarily understand that fundraising is, you know, a part of politics in New Zealand, And so they can, as you say, they can be sometimes a bit mistrustful of what's going on. But I think, as I say, if parties are complying with the law, being very careful to disclose their donations and where the money is coming from, then I don't think the public should be concerned.
Mm. I'm going to shift on to the United Nations Migration Pact. So I'm curious, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, well, look, obviously it's a it's an area that cuts across two portfolios, which aren't my specialty area, foreign affairs and migration. But look, what I can tell you is there's a couple of things, because there's been an awful lot of, obfuscation from Winston Peters on this. So first of all, Winston's tried to imply that somehow it was all put in place under National anyway, which is simply untrue. So what happened in 2016... the United Nations member countries agreed that they'd start work looking at what some sort of migration pact might look like. So that's just saying, you know, let's have a look at this area of work. Now, that that work apparently came back to the UN in July this year. So that was when the, you know, the official group came back and said, okay, this is what we think the pact should look like. And as of a few days ago, I think about 160 of the 193 countries have now signed up to that. And obviously it's for this government to decide whether or not they will. The reason we're concerned about it is because it's very restrictive as to what countries can do with their own immigration policies. Now, the reason National doesn't think we should sign up to it is because actually we think we have a very good framework for immigration. In fact, in migration, it's actually one that's often quoted around the world as being, you know, a model of how things can work. I mean, not perfect, and we can all argue the ins and outs of it, but we have a very good system. But more to the point, we don't think New Zealand should be signing away its rights as an independent country to make its own decisions about migration and how we handle it. So our concern is really that one of maintaining the ultimate right for New Zealand to make its own decisions, not ceding that to the UN.
So this is a matter of sovereignty to the National Party.
That's right.
Do you think this rejection potentially... that could happen could damage New Zealand's relations overseas?
Look, I don't think so, and that's certainly not what our foreign affairs people are saying. They think that actually there's that's something that we're going to be able to do, you know, without damage. I think we're very careful. In fact, New Zealand, under both, you know, both major parties, has worked very hard over many years to be well respected at an international forum. We work very hard at them, and actually I think have a very good standing. And I think we can manage this without damaging that.
I noticed a petition has also been submitted to government around this, asking for a referendum on the United Nations Migration Pact. I'm curious, do you think New Zealanders should have a say in this?
Well, it's a sort of a wider issue around citizens' referendums generally. And look, it may not be a popular view, but my concern is, and we were just talking before about sometimes it's very difficult for the wider public to understand all the ins and outs of the way things work. I think some issues, particularly conscience issues, are more lend themselves more, I guess, to being a useful referendum topic or the flag referendum. I mean, it's a reasonably simple concept. You know, do you want that flag or that flag? And then there's not a whole lot of complexity in the ins and outs and difficult questions of law and precedent and control and, you know, what have you. I think issues like this are why we have a representative democracy, where we elect people who can spend their, you know, their time and become specialists, you know, living and breathing these issues, rather than have them sort of decided by whoever turns up to vote, which is often a very small number in referenda, and then, you know, who can run the best PR campaign. Because I tell you what, any publicity campaign around any referendum is never going to be able to deal with the complexities of some of these issues. So I'm not convinced it's a good one for a referendum, but I think, as I say, it's sort of my view on where referenda work well and where they're not as easy as it might seem at first glance.
Very interesting. I'm going to close off with my final, of course, hard-hitting question.
This is the one I fear.
So I got into a conversation this morning around, like, favourite Christmas desserts. And of course,
I could give you a list.
Jen has one as two. I might just pop her on. But also, like, what is your favorite Christmas dessert?
Okay, so I tell you what, I am an absolute brandy snap holic, but only at Christmas. It's funny, like Christmas Day, if I don't have an unhealthily large number of brandy snacks, and they're best when they're a couple of hours later when they start to go a bit soft.
Sticky.
But then equal, coming in a very close, maybe a close second, but if not first equal, would have to be a boozy trifle.
Oh, that's mine. Mine is trifle. My mum's trifle.
Yeah. Right?
And then not eating it for breakfast the next day.
And it's better the next day. So yeah. I want to make sure I take brandy snacks and trifle for Christmas lunch, because then I know they're there.
Oh, so good.
I love it. Brilliant.
What's yours, Laura?
I'm a gingerbread girl, but ooh, I think that's like...
it's a northern hemisphere.
Yeah, it's definitely a northern hemisphere one, where you're like, I need something kind of spicy to warm up my inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways.
You have to get into the trifle. It's legend.
Oh, my mom makes the best trifle. It's the one we love at Christmas. It's the mandatory one.
Yeah, no, you've got to have it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks, Amy. We'll be talking with you next week.
All right, talk next week. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
The National Party's Amy Adams on 95 BFM.
The Wire.